This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Marianne Faithfull has a new CD called Before the Poison. We're going to listen to an interview I recorded with her a few days ago. Later, we'll hear an excerpt of our 1994 conversation. Faithfull's first record was the 1964 hit As Tears Go By, which was written by Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
It is the evening of the day. I sit and watch the children play.
Marianne Faithfull was 17 when that record was released. At 18, she was married and became a mother. When she was 19, she began an affair with Mick Jagger and lived in the middle of a scene of parties and celebrities that zillions of teenagers yearned to be part of. But by 1970, she and Jagger had split up, and she had become addicted to heroin. At her low point, she lived on the street. She started recording again in the late 70s, and her voice was no longer the pure, innocent, uninflected voice of As Tears Go By. In the past couple of decades, she's been singing many original songs, as well as songs by Kurt Weill. Her new CD, Before the Poison, features several songs she co-wrote with P.J. Harvey and Nick Cave. This song, The Mystery of Love, has words and music by P.J. Harvey.
When you're not by my side, the world's in two. And I'm a fool. When you're not in my sight, then everything just fades from view.
That's Marianne Faithfull from her new CD, Before the Poison. Marianne Faithfull, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
This song was by P.J. Harvey, who collaborates on several
it's,
of the songs.
It's written by Polly, especially for me, actually.
What are some of the things you think you have in common with her?
Well, I didn't know. You know, the first thing we had to do was meet her. I'm a huge fan of her work. I really like what she does, and I like her attitude. So there's that. But of course, we had to meet to see if we liked each other. And we did meet in Los Angeles while I was still recording Kissing Time, and we did like each other. And what we decided we wanted to do was make a very, very dark record.
You succeeded.
Darker than any Marianne Faithfull record that has ever been before.
That's some stiff competition.
Well, I don't know if we managed it, but it's pretty dark.
Now, your voice is very dark. Your voice is very different from the way it was at the start of your career.
Well, obviously.
Yes. Well, some people's voices change more than others.
Mine was always, you know, I studied singing at school when I was young. And my singing teacher used to say to me in hushed tones, you know, you have a soprano now, but I think if you're very, very lucky, it will become a contralto.
Why did your teacher think that that would be good luck if it
Well, it's a very rare thing to have. It's Kathleen Ferrier. You know, there are very few real contraltos. And I'm one of them.
I don't know what you'll make of this, but I think of you as being similar to Billie Holiday and Lottie Lenya. as having as great singers whose voices were very different at the beginning and end of
yeah,
their careers.
Of course. But that's partly technical, like I told you, but it's also experience. It's, in my case, I mean, thank you very much for comparing me in any way with my great heroines, Billie Holiday and Lotte Lenya. But in my case, and I'm sure in their case, you know, a lot of it is down to experience. You get the voice you really want. You get what I suppose a writer would call it, finding my voice.
Was there anything that you missed about that pure soprano that you had? You know, the high notes or that...
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, if I hadn't been discovered by Andrew Oldham and gone into the pop business, I would have probably either become an actress or I might have gone to the Royal Academy of Music in London and I could have sung Mozart. I would have enjoyed that. But on the other hand, you know, I kind of... it was very exciting to be in at the beginning of a new thing, which is what was happening in London in the early 60s. And I was right there.
You know, it's interesting, like As Tears Go By, which is your famous first hit, mm-hmm. You're singing in an almost uninflected voice.
That's what Andrew wanted.
That's what he wanted. Why?
Mm.
This is Andrew Luke Oldham, who was your producer, and he was the Rolling Stones producer.
He was my manager.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah. And I suppose he was the producer, too. Yeah.
So why did he want it uninflected?
I don't know. I think he wanted me to sound like Mick.
Huh.
I really don't know. You'd have to ask Andrew.
It's so interesting because there's so much drama in your singing now.
Well, yeah, but that's my natural thing. Maybe I didn't have that yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned that...
I was only 17.
Right, right.
I don't think I had any.
Any drama?
No, and I was terribly, terribly nervous. So probably the natural thing I did was just sort of do what I do when I'm very frightened, is pretend I'm very small and stay very still and do as little as possible.
Now, you mentioned that Lotte Lenya is one of your music heroes.
Mm.
So I thought maybe we could listen to a recording in which you sing Kurt Vile.
Mm.
And you made a recording. You've done a lot of Kurt Vile.
I've done two records
of
the Brecht Vile canon. The first one was the Cabaret record, which was 20th Century Blues, which I love. But my actual total favorite of all time is the Seven Deadly Sins. But play something from 20th Century Blues. Play Pirate Jenny. I like Pirate Jenny because it's so fierce.
And Paul Trueblood is at the piano, and he sounds
Paul
great.
Paul Trueblood is such a great musician,
mm-hmm.
and I was so lucky to work with him. And I'm very fond of him.
Well, let's go for the drama and hear Pirate Jenny. And this is from Marianne Faithfull's album 20th Century Blues with Paul Trueblood at the piano.
You lads see me wash the glasses, wipe the floors, make the beds. I'm the best of servants. You can kindly throw me pennies and I thank you very much. And you see me ragged and tattered in this dirty hotel. You don't know in hell who's talking. You still don't know in hell who's talking. Yet one fine day there will be roars from the harbour, and you'll ask what is all that screeching for. And you'll see me smiling as I dunk the glasses, and you'll say, what's she got to smile at for? And the ship, eight sails shining, 55 cannons wide, sir, waits there at the quay. You say, work on, wipe the glasses, my girl, and just slip me a dirty...
Marianne Faithfull, how were you introduced to the music of Kurt Vile?
Well, I sort of grew up with it, you know. Both my parents... I don't know how they did it. I don't know how my mother did this. But she brought 78s with her from Vienna. And a lot of the songs on 20th Century Blues are my mother's favourite songs or my father's favourite songs. Like, my father's favourite song was Falling in Love Again.
Huh.
Yep. And he loved Cole Porter and he loved all sorts of things like that. Yeah.
So is that like the first music you heard?
I suppose it is, yes. Yeah.
Was your mother a singer? I had read that she...
No.
No?
My mother was a dancer.
Oh.
She was very young, of course, and she was only 24 when Mr. Hitler marched into Vienna in the Anschluss. But she was a dancer in Berlin. And she, as she would be coming into the theatre to rehearse as the corps de ballet for Mr. Reinhardt, would see Kurt Weill and Bertolt Brecht staggering out in the morning, having been up all night writing the Threepney Opera. And they would all bob a little curtsy and say, Guten Morgen, Mr. Weill, Guten Morgen, Mr. Brecht.
When you were growing up, did she have, like, clothes from her costumes from when she danced in the closet?
Not much, no. I just have a very beautiful piece of chiffon. And some beads. I have very little. She didn't bring any of that much with her. No, I don't know what happened to it.
But that sense of theater was...
It's as if she wanted to leave it all behind and have a new life. She'd had quite a hard time, I think, during the war. My grandmother was Jewish, you know, and she met my father was a spy. I mean, it's so incredible. It's amazing. And she was his contact in Vienna. So it was really, I think she was really happy to marry my father and get out. Unfortunately, of course, the marriage was a disaster. But
well, I think they separated when you were six or something, right?
Yes.
And then you lived with your mother.
I did, yes.
You know, while we're talking about theater, you were just starring in a musical.
Well, I wouldn't call it a musical.
I'd call
it a theatre play with music.
Okay.
You mean The Black Rider?
Yes.
Yes, well, that was a wonderful experience. Very, very hard work, of course, because I did not go to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, but just became a pop singer. I'm not really trained up to do that sort of every night matinees, one day off a week. It was incredibly hard work for me. But, of course, what could I do? Bob Wilson offered me the part of the devil.
So
I
this
couldn't
was,
say
this was,
no to that, could I?
So this is like a text by William Burroughs, music by Tom Waits.
Text by Bill Burroughs, my old friend. Music by Tom Waits, also my old friend. And my new friend, Bob Wilson.
This is the theatre director, Robert Wilson. Now, this play was written by William Burroughs. What was it like for you? You eventually became a friend of his, but I imagine that you read him before you knew him.
I did, yes.
How old
were
you?
Well, no, actually, no. I met him in London in the 60s.
Oh.
But he certainly wasn't interested in a little girl like me. But I did become great friends with him much later. Yeah.
What reaction did you have to his writing? What impact did it have
on
you?
Well, I thought that was exactly what I had to do. So I took it very, very literally.
What was it that he did that you felt you had? Which aspect of the life that he described?
Oh, please don't make me say it.
You're talking about the drugs or just a bohemian lifestyle?
I'm talking
lifestyle?
About going out and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Don't make me say it.
Right, right. Mm. Did he make it seem romantic?
No, he just made it seem absolutely the only way to live.
Mm-hmm.
What a great thing to do, I thought to myself. I guess by then, fame and fortune and all that stuff was beginning to grate a lot.
Now, I want to mention another song that seems a little out of character for you on your previous CD, which was...
Well, my previous CD, which I do love,
mm-hmm.
You mean Kissing Time?
Yes.
Was, in fact, a very experimental work. I wanted to learn about the new technology. That's what I did it. And so I went to the best people, like Billy Corgan, like Beck, like Jarvis Cocker, like Damon.
Well, a song here that strikes me as a really interesting choice, a kind of out of character, is I'm Into Something Good, which was...
Oh, that was just fun.
Yeah, well, that was a Herman's Hermits hit in 1964.
I love doing that. Yeah, and this is, you know, you've got to remember, when we did Kissing Time, the world was a different place. And we could have fun, and we did, and we loved it.
We know
Billy
the,
and I.
The year that that was a hit, Into Something Good, 1964, was, I think, the year...
It was the year As Tears Come Up.
Yeah, the year. And I think it was about that time that you started on tour, and you went on a tour, not with Herman's
not
Hermits.
Not with Herman's Hermits.
But with Freddie and the Dreamers.
And the Hollies. They were good.
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Yep.
Where did you see yourself fitting in as...
I didn't fit in. I was completely out of place. And I actually believed that I would go back to school when the tour was over and pick up my life again.
Were you like the only girl in
I was,
in the tour?
And what I was doing was reading my A-level books.
Oh, because you were still in school.
Well, that's what I thought I was, yes. So, but I do remember very well how kind the Hollies were to me. Really sweet.
Did the guys on the tour try to be protective or try to take advantage of you?
No, of course they didn't. I mean, I kind of, you know, I did learn the meaning of the word tour romance.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was rather fun. Why not?
Well, I'm going to play I'm Into Something Good from your previous album, Kissin' Time.
Good.
Okay.
I think it's charming.
Me too.
And, you know, now in this world, I could never do something like that again. That's why it's called Before the Poison.
That's why the new CD is called that.
Yeah. But let's remember the days when we could do something like this.
Okay, so this is Marianne Faithfull from her previous CD, Kissin' Time.
Woke up this morning feeling fine. There's something special on my mind. Last night I met a new guy in the neighborhood. Oh yeah. Something tells me I'm into something good. He's the kind of guy who's not too shy.
Marianne Faithfull from her previous CD, Kissin' Time, the 1964 hit, I'm Into Something Good. And she has a new CD called Before the Poison.
Much darker.
At what point did you start getting to know the, and I assume that you did at some point, the Andy Warhol factory crew?
I didn't.
You never knew them?
No, I never did.
It just seems to me you'd have connected at some point.
Never. Never, 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 never. I went to New York once with Andrew. And what I did do was meet up with Al Grossman and Bobby Newirth. And it was the time when Bob Dylan had his motorbike accident. And I think I had my first joint with Bobby Newirth. And I was up all night being sick.
From the joint?
Mm-hmm. I was 18.
Right.
Just wasn't able, didn't know anything. Just couldn't deal with it.
Hmm. So, you know, I'm wondering what you thought, because you must have been aware of this, whether you knew the Velvet Underground personally or not.
Oh, I thought they were wonderful.
Yeah.
But I had a sense of self-preservation, which told me, do not go to New York. You will die.
Right, because you'd get so deep into it with...
It would have been another Edie Sedgwick, you know. It was quite bad enough in London, if I may say so. But, I mean, it would have been too much for me.
What,
at least I knew London.
What did you make of it when the Velvet Underground recorded Venus and Furs?
And I didn't really think about it.
I ask this in case our listeners are confused.
My great-great uncle,
yes,
was Baron Leopold von Sacher-Masoch, who gave his name to masochism and wrote a book called Venus in Furs. Yeah, I mean, I sort of noticed it but didn't really notice it. There were other songs on the Velvet Underground that I thought were better. I didn't think that was one of the best. I'm a huge and was always a huge fan of Andy Warhol. I mean, before I got discovered and all that stuff happened, my mother took me to see a huge Andy Warhol retrospective at the Tate. I went to see the Picasso retrospective. I went to see the Surrealist retrospective. It was wonderful, you know. I had a wonderful life before all that stuff happened.